Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep it locked. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
a lyrical analysis of Kanye West.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And today, oh, what a glorious day it is, right, Chris?
Yeah, we have the new Kanye album, Ye, out and about in the world, living and breathing.
Yep, just out there being judged, being loved, doing everything that a Kanye album does.
Yeah, right? Judged fairly, unfairly, kindly, harshly. It wouldn't be Yeezy season without some outrageous takes that infuriate my heart and soul.
But I love it. And I mostly love that you'll be the one to actually argue with those people and I can just sit back and watch.
It's all for you, boo. All for you. So this is a episode that's going to be overviewing initially our takes and theories on the album Ye before we start a 7-week narrative and thematic deconstruction. And for first-time listeners, I'm going to make this fast just because long-time listeners, you just heard this in a previous episode. But a little overview of who we are and what we do. Travis and I are film critics and writers, and for years we were doing film analysis, narrative and thematic deconstructions, being press at film festivals. We had worked on a couple scripts with people, and that was kind of our angle, and we loved Kanye, and we're talking about how Yeezus was using a lot of the techniques that we were discussing these movies using. So we decided in 2015 to start this podcast that was analyzing Kanye's growth as a narrative and thematic artist over the course of his discography, because you can see the developments of his artistic voice album by album by album as he increases the complexity and depth of his storytelling, from tracks to entire albums having a narrative and story. So that's really our focus. We're not musical experts. If you handed me a saxophone, I would probably try to drink something out of it. No musical ability at all. But what we can do is, while we can't tell you about notes and production cuteness, we can tell you how the soundscape is fitting into the narrative and themes. That we can do. How the samples fit into the narrative and themes. Mm-hmm. So that's what we bring to the table. And, you know, our previous episodes, we've talked a lot about the discography Kanye has and how you can kind of trace a story over it. So the album Ye, adding to that story as it does, it's been very eye-opening, which Travis and I were just talking before starting the recording. We're just like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. Blowing my mind.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did that cover it?
Yeah. So the first, we did an episode just before this, which was just kind of a knee-jerk reaction to everything, including the live stream and the initial roll of the album. But this is, yeah, we're going to try our best to nail down what we think the album's doing heading into the sound analysis. And to do that, we're going to need a little help from our dear friend, Jordan C. Johnson. Jordan, where are you?
I'm over here.
Oh, there he is. Sorry. You're in the corner. You're in that shady corner. I couldn't quite spot you.
Yeah, I'm most comfortable, you know, away from people.
Away from Chris.
Yeah, specifically.
He's very grabby.
What?
Oh, I like it, but Jordan's, it makes Jordan uncomfortable.
Yeah, he's getting into Russell Simmons territory.
Oh, man. I didn't think we were going to be starting this episode with me getting compared to Russell Simmons. not my proudest moment.
Before we jump in, actually, really quick, Jordan wasn't on our knee jerk reaction episode. How's the album sitting with you, Jordan? You're a huge Kanye fan. Are you a fan?
You know, I'm not crazy about it. It's, you know, it's probably his weakest effort.
Yeah. Yeah. You and Pitchfork are on the same page there.
No, I mean, I don't even want that to sit there for too long with people thinking that's true. So, yeah, no, it's absolutely fucking incredible.
All right. We're on the same page.
We're all in agreement.
Greatest album of all time.
Gavel. And so people might be wondering, why do we think that this is such a great and phenomenal album, especially when there's been a lot of takes recently that are saying, no, bad. Bad album. No good. Kanye done did wrong. And part of it for us is it's fascinating to look at... when we look at the art of Kanye, we kind of take two perspectives on it. One is just the perspective of the art itself without authorial intent, right? You're just looking at the work, what's in the work, and what you can take away from the work. And that leads to one kind of reading about things. But then other times you need to look at what the artist intended or the context of the artist's life to gain some insight into the album itself or into previous works that they've done. And one of the fascinating things to me about this album, aside from its disassociated from Kanye the person and Kanye's life, which is kind of hard to do with this album, but that Kanye comes out on the album talking about his bipolarism, which is something that he had never done before. It's something that people had speculated on for a while. And it's interesting looking back over his discography and seeing how much duality plays into the discography, especially from Graduation on, that you start to get this psyche that's starting to be pulled in two different directions. Which one, right? And it comes to a head on the last two albums. I mean, we have him with My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy going into this dreamscape that's horrifying, where the first song, All of the Lights, paints this picture of somebody that's in this very demoralizing and sad existence where they keep making wrong decisions and ruining their family relationships. Then you have Monster and So Appalled that are just these really intense lifestyles that wouldn't make somebody happy, but that are all caused by the self, followed by this romantic longing and woe that results. And you see the duality come to more of a fruition on Yeezus with the warring psyches that we get there, from the Justin Vernon vulnerability to the Chief Keef assassin King Louis ego, and how you present yourself to the public versus how you feel on the inside. And that comes out then again on The Life of Pablo with Which One. You have a song like Father Stretch My Hands or Ultra Light Beam that seems so beautiful, followed up by something like Feedback or Freestyle 4. And then I Love Kanye that talks about like the old Kanye, the new Kanye, waves that parallels a very aggressive, ego-driven Kanye that's like, I'm gonna fuck your bitch, to a more conscious Kanye that's like, bird can't fly in a cage, like sun don't shine in the shade. To then finally have him on Ye talking about the bipolarism, it just puts into such context everything that was going on.
Yeah. And it's such a direct reflection of what's going on in his real life. Like, in addition to him, you know, acting a certain way or feeling pressured to act a certain way, a lot of it, a lot of what's played into this is how the different ways, you know, society perceives him. And we see that happening in the Charlemagne the God interview versus the TMZ interview. It's not like what he was doing in each of those interviews is too different. You know, he's speaking very freely and he's at times saying what seem like outrageous things, but it's all about the context. You know, is he in a room with Charlamagne, like giving a sensible interview, or is he in TMZ with a room full of people judging his every move and he has to yell to reach everybody? Those different mediums create different contexts for how we view him. And that's also those dueling images of him are coming to fruition on, or coming at a head on the, on Ye as well.
Yeah. That's one of the cool things about this album is that we've talked to a source that's was on the audio engineering team for this album. And they gave us a little bit of insights into some of the artistic intentions behind the album. One of them being that Kanye viewed this as an opportunity to reclaim himself from this manufactured form of himself that he felt he had become due to pressures from media, from the industry, that he was the TMZ Kanye because that's what people wanted, where he's actually the Charlemagne the God Kanye. So a lot of the performance art references leading up to the album were about that, much less saying that he was doing performance art with this, and more so saying that he had been doing performance arts. Like, he had become this public caricature or character the way that Andy Kaufman had been. And he's trying to get back more so to being Andy Kaufman, that life had become art. So that was initially then the goal with the Charlamagne and TMZ interviews, to showcase that dynamic. Mm. And then the album, despite the changes to it over time, right, saying that he had thrown the album away and built it back up, the point of the album the entire time was to get at this idea that he was getting back to himself. That's why he went to Wyoming in the first place.
Yeah. And then on top of all that, like, it, in a way, this becomes a response to what My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was doing. Because in both cases, with My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and Ye, we have two albums where he's essentially been crucified by society. I mean, not rightfully so, but there's a reason. He ran up on stage and stole Taylor Swift's award, and it was a douchey thing to do. And
well, you know, microphone.
Yes. No, the award is his now. And, you know, he was ruined because of it. And a similar situation happened with all the, well, I guess the fallout after the Life of Pablo tour, but also, you know, everything with the MAGA hat. Like, he feels alienated and separated, and like, you know, no one understands him. But My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was a sort of aggressive, unhealthy reaction to it, where it was like, oh, you want me to act this way? Like, here I am. Like, I'm going to be monster. I'm going to be so appalled. And then I'm going to show how it's alienated to be and left me lost in the world. To whereas Ye, it is a reaction to all the stuff, all those, the crucifixion that happened to him, but almost in a much more healthy way. It's not like the album ends and he has, like, you know, pointed the right direction to go and everything's happy, but he's at least ready to work on himself and be in a healthier state of mind. And he's not letting that crucifixion get him down. He's willing to fight to reclaim how people see him.
I feel like he said in previous interviews that My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, where everybody loves it, it was him kind of showing what he can do. It wasn't necessarily the album that he was the most proud of or the most passionate about. It was him being like, I'm fighting for my life right now, so I'm going to show everybody why they love me. And that's not necessarily him. While it does get into like what he's feeling and thinking, he's also hyper aware of like, I'm making this so people like me again. Where this album seemed less like, I'm making this so people like me, and more, I'm making this so people understand me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a better understanding.
We understand you, Kanye.
And, you know, Malik Yousef had mentioned before the album came out that this was My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy 2. And our source had also talked about that the album in its conception wasn't viewed as a character being the same, like the same kind of, like, you should listen to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and be like, that's the guy on Ye, like, same character. But that spiritually, as you were detailing, Travis, that the album's supposed to be that place.
Right.
And where you had Nicki Minaj as the introduction to the dark fantasy, now you have Nicki on the outro of this album, kind of bringing you back up from the scape that you were just in. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And even though it is like a sort of sequel to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, it also is kind of the result of everything that's happened since My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, including Watch the Throne and Cruel Summer, as Jordan would like to argue. And it's not like throughout Ye you can see like, oh, there's Yeezus like bubbling up from under the surface. It's just that there's a side of Kanye that is, you know, bombastic, over the top, a side he'd like to rein in. And then there's also, you know, the Saint Pablo side of him that is, you know, thinks bigger and cares about the people. And it's him learning to balance both of those sides throughout Ye and just become a singularly healthy, nailed down individual.
I think that's one of the things when we talk about the difference between viewing the art in the context of the art versus viewing the art in context of the artist. Like if Kanye were to say something like, I made Ye and it has no connection with Yeezus or anything, but if you're just looking at the art and you're looking at the themes and you're looking at the characterization, it's something where you can say like, well, he's talking about this persona on Ye, and this persona tracks so well with what we saw on Yeezus that it feels like an extension of the Yeezus character. So whether the artist intended it or not, it's almost like the spiritual succession of that. Same thing with Saint Pablo, right? We have this battle between two psyches, one that's very Yeezusian and one that's supposed to be like Paul, who went from a sinner to converted to Christianity, eventually to a saint. And that version of Kanye wins out on the life of Pablo. And you see, as you're saying, that persona coming back into play, maybe not outright, but it's there.
Yeah. So yeah, when we refer to, you know, the Yeezus side of Kanye or the St. Pablo side of Kanye throughout Ye, we're not saying that, you know, those literal characters are showing up and it's a big family reunion or anything. It's just to represent those sides of Kanye exist. You know, ever like on Hold My Liquor, both of those sides of Kanye are kind of there. So we're just using Yeezus and St. Pablo as these sort of labels to identify those two sides.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Jordan, any thoughts?
Well, I think the idea of this being My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy 2 is, I think it makes sense in sort of a roundabout way, but I think it's super critical to look at this more as a follow-up to Yeezus and Life of Pablo, because I think Yeezus and Life of Pablo are where the characters that this album deals with are created in a real way. And I'll also add, I think it's also crucial to look at Watch the Throne and Cruel Summer, where I think the roots of Yeezus really start to take shape for the first time. Basically, my take on this whole thing, we've kind of alluded to it on previous episodes, but the way I look at the narrative of what happens after my Twisted Fantasy, that title's so long. So by the end of the album and Lost in the World, I mean, he's dealing with fame and, you know, his mom dying, and he feels lost, and he feels like there's a lot of themes going on with him feeling not disenchanted with hip hop, but feeling like he has kind of revamped it so much that he's kind of in a place of leadership now and trying to understand what that means when he's always found so much strength coming from other hip hop artists. So I think that's what happens in Watch the Throne and Cruel Summer, where he looks to collaboration. He looks to his friends in the community, you know, to kind of build up this new person, because as he says in Cruel Summer, he's been feeling even, you know, suicidal, and he doesn't know how to handle that. So he builds up this new character who eventually evolves into Yeezus, who is this, you know, hard as fuck, totally unemotional, cold, I'm the greatest of all time God character. Totally over the top, totally just calloused off from the world. But, you know, that's what he needs. That's what he needs to survive and go on. And then by the end of Yeezus, with Bound 2 and everything, he's trying to deal with feeling like he's that persona, but also this newfound romance with Kim and this long-term relationship that the Yeezus character is very dubious about. And then in Life of Pablo, you're seeing him deal with both sides of that. Which one is going to win? Is it going to be Yeezus? Is it going to be Pablo? How do you go forward with these two sides competing with each other? And this album, I think, resolves that arc in a way where he learns to embrace both sides, but also by the end kind of decides that even though he does love all of his parts, one part kind of is moving on going forward for his survival and happiness. Mm.
You kind of get a foreshadow of that with St. Pablo. Like that dynamic of like which one is so strong in the Life of Pablo, and we think that he picks a side, but there's still obviously with him in real life a battle going on that none of us knew about at the time. Like when we heard St. Pablo, I think a lot of us were thinking like, oh my goodness, like Kanye's just got everything figured out. Like he's doing great. Like the song lyrics position him in such a way that he's like viewing everything. And at the top of this like mountaintop, like, or in the sky, like looking down, awesome. And by the end of the year, he's hospitalized. Like he's not doing as well as we thought. And resolving a lot of that on Ye is very important, because it still wasn't as resolved as we thought, because there wasn't that acceptance of what was going on.
And I think it's important to note too that the way the whole Life of Pablo is structured around, you know, ascending to sainthood, and it ends with him, you know, capping the album with a new track, St. Pablo, where he feels like he's become that saint. I am one with the people. He's like this figure of hope for the people, right? And I think that also is key, because I think that is what leads to the Yeezus character sort of returning in a way at the beginning of this album, because I think he finds that sainthood is not really possible and doesn't really work and fulfill him, and he can't just be that figure. It's too much pressure. He feels boxed in by that saintly place that he's created for himself, and so he kind of lets the beast out of the cage a bit again. And I think that's what he needed to do in order to realize, okay, I've let it out, I've vented that, and now I see like the healthy way of who I can be and how to go forward.
I like that. Like I'm gonna speak on it, having been in that position, oh no, like let me speak on it and show you what I learned and like what I'm gonna do now. Which I mean, Ye has a much different ending with just him as a father.
Right. And I think that's the key of how it relates to Twisted Fantasy, where that album ends with him lost, not knowing how to handle this new person that he's become, and looking to collaboration with, you know, people close to him to sort of build up this hardened figure. And that's why I think in Watch the Throne and Cruel Summer, there's a lot of, I don't know if negativity is the right word, but there's a lot of coldness and harshness and, you know, braggadocio totally. And all that shit. But I kind of think it's interesting that this is almost the reverse, where this album ends with him not feeling lost, but feeling like feeling free, feeling like a kid again, feeling like he is someone new again. But now it doesn't feel like it's a negative or depressing. He has a lot of stuff that fulfills him. He has a lot of great stuff in his life now. And I kind of feel like I have a theory that Kids See Ghosts is going to be sort of like a similar role as Watch the Throne and Cruel Summer were, but now with a positive spin, because now he's not looking to harden himself or close himself off anymore. Just the opposite. He's moved on from that, and now he's looking to collaborate with the people around him because he wants to build himself up in a positive way, into someone who cares about himself and his family and his friends. And I think that's what we're going to see going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, and maybe this is where we can get into the structure of the album, but those last three tracks really do set up somebody who's ready to be healthier. Like in No Mistakes, he's like squashing the beef with Drake and everything, and he's definitely setting that character up for that part of the journey.
Right.
Yes. Man, I still can't get over how much a lot of the content from St. Pablo plays into everything we just saw with his return to Twitter, a lot of the content he was talking about there, and even some of the aspects of this album.
Yeah.
Can't wait till we do our St. Pablo episode.
You know what? Even in a way, Wolves has kind of got into a lot of this too, how, you know, it's not like he is saying, I'm a lamb now in Wolves. He's going to cover Nori and Saint in lamb's wool and raise them to be better. But he never says, like, he's not a wolf anymore. And there's this idea of the wolves and the lambs coexisting, which we, in that episode we did, you know, we referenced the Bible verses that talk about the lambs and the wolves coexisting. And Kanye is readying himself for that part of his life where he can't, you know, erase his past mistakes, but he can change and he can refit himself into the, you know, the circle he's gotten himself into just because people see you a certain way doesn't mean your kids have to be that way. You can make a new name for yourself. You can build a new life. And I feel a lot of that happening on Ye as well. It's not necessarily him killing off that Yeezus side of him, but kind of channeling that energy and finding a way to make it work and be a holistic, you know, human being.
Something I'm just kind of thinking about, do you think it would be fair to be not counting College Dropout and Late Registration? I'm kind of thinking this might be the first Kanye album that ends on a truly unironically positive note. Like, by the end of this album, like, he's concerned about the future and he's worried about his, about North and everything, but you get a sense of genuine hope and a sense that he's ready for a new chapter.
Totally.
And I don't think you could say that about any of his previous albums. They all have at least a hint of irony or foreboding of some kind. I think maybe if you argued that you know, the revised version of Pablo ending with Saint Pablo, but even that song has a bunch of like political strife and stuff in it. But I mean, if you look at the original ending, which is basically Wolves for all intents and purposes, I mean, that's a super fucking bleak way to end an album.
It's and on top of that, Wolves doesn't even really provide a clear direction of where the next album will go. Like, Chris and I were speculating the fuck out of Ye. And like, oh, what's he going to do after Wolves? Like, he's resolved the relationship issues. Whereas at the end of Ye, you kind of, there is that hopefulness to it. And you get like, oh, the next step is him learning to deal with his past mistakes and learning to raise his daughter in the right way and to reshape his identity so that, you know, his daughter can look him in the eyes and not look at like everything, the stupid shit he did in the past and everything.
It really is crazy how much is resolved by the end of this album. Like, so many narrative strands that he's been developing for albums at this point truly feel closed now, which is interesting. Like, I don't know if I feel that about any other Kanye album. It's to the point where it really feels like whatever he does next could be, who knows? I mean, it could be completely new.
Could be like, which Kid C goes, like, what direction is that going to take? Is that going to continue? Like, he had labeled on the board that this was the spiritual awakening. Does Kid C Ghost play on that more, or is it more like a return to innocent fun like we got on College Dropout? Though All Falls Down probably wasn't innocent fun, but
I mean, it, I think if it is going to be some kind of return to something from earlier in his career, it's going to be laced with the lens of so much different experience now. I mean, it would be completely new, even if it does harken back in some ways. There's no way it's just going to be like, oh, College Dropout, Late Registration, fun. You know what I mean? Like, there's just too much going on with him for it to be that straightforward.
Yeah. And well, I guess one of the phrases that was being thrown about when they were making the album was Polo Pablo. That this was like Kanye on his Pablo level, but back in the polo. And one of the things that our source told us was that some of the dudundums on I Thought About Killing You are actually from New Workout Plan, because it's Kanye trying to get back to that more innocent, kid-like state of being, but slowly chipping away on that throughout the album.
Slowly chipping away that on that song.
Yes.
Because that song moves from, you know, the beginning, like you're talking about, where he's sort of taking an overview of himself and looking at the other, I Thought About Killing You, he's probably talking about killing that bad side of himself, the side that makes everyone hate him. And as the song builds, you can feel that Yeezus-esque persona coming out and taking over the song, and that provides, you know, the structure for the album, heading into Yikes and All Mine. You get that bombastic individual kind of dominating. And then obviously moving forward and Wouldn't Leave is this reaction like, okay, I have to drop that side of myself or Kim's gonna leave me, and then going forward from that, it's crazy.
Yeah, the structure of the album, as we talked about, moving from darkness to a place of lightness, you have that motion. The question that we don't quite know yet is this a concept the way 808s is a concept, or is it a narrative the way that Yeezus and The Life of Pablo are a narrative, where you kind of get these step-by-step story progression?
I think you're less sure of that than I am, to be fair.
Yeah, I think
I'm pretty fucking convinced it's a narrative. I have, at this point, I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on most of the pieces. There are like a few songs that I'm still kind of working through, but I'm pretty sure it's a distinct, identifiable narrative.
Well, either way, the structure seems to take the form of the first three songs are more in the mania aspect of things. Maybe not the intro. The intro is very not manic, but thoughtful. But you can feel the ramping up of the bipolar mania, or the mania that's brought on from the persona of having to be who you think that you have to be in the public eye, or who TMZ makes you out to be, which is why you can hear the screams in the background of the soundscape leading.
Yeah. And I do think that character, that like Yeezus character, who is, you know, going through those motions of being, manic and crazy and provocative and stirring shit up, you know, I think that persona is, it's to some degree, it's always been sort of ironic on his albums. I mean, as we've discussed on the Yeezus episodes, I mean, that whole album is just filled with irony. Every line needs to be looked at twice to understand. It's fucking ridiculous. But I think the character now feels more performative than it's ever felt. I think it's he feels very thin and ironic, and in a way that I think is, you kind of get this, you kind of understand how silly and ridiculous he is in a way, immediately, I think, in a way that is more pronounced than previous albums. I think at this point, Kanye 100% knows that this character is a character, you know, like it's not real. It's something he's using sort of almost as a coping mechanism, which he comes to terms with by the end of the album. But yeah, just through all those opening tracks, I always get the sense that Kanye is, the Ye persona, I guess, is commenting on this performance the whole time in some way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes out in full force in Yikes, because you have the chorus he's saying shit could get menacing, frightening, find help. So he's saying find help. That is him. That is Kanye. But then you have later, you know, down the line in the song, the chorus comes back in and you have the other side of Ye coming out, sounds so different, so elevated. And he says, like, see, this is why all the bitches fuck with Ye. It's such a stark contrast that, like you said, it almost seems too obvious that he wants everyone to grasp what he's doing.
Oh, I mean, they're literally talking over each other by the end of the song. It's nuts.
Yeah, that's talking about it feeling thin. Like, you see On Sight and Black Skinhead and New Slaves and I Am a God even, and there's a lot of belief in those things. The irony is kind of hard to find. But when you're looking at something like Yikes, as you two just described, the contrast is right there, where he frames the song as like, look at this. This shit gets menacing, frightening, find help. And then all the verses are so aggressive that it's almost pulling the curtain on it from the get-go. Instead of having, like, if this was Yeezus, it would just be the verses. And later in the album would have to understand that he was scared of himself and all of that. But he has condensed everything to the point where he just overlaps and kind of pulls the curtain and titles the track Yikes. Like, do you see this?
Yeah, and I mean,
Yikes.
Yeah, and throughout the album, he's constantly making comparisons of that, you know, that manic character to like ridiculous joke characters. I mean, we kind of got that a little bit with Jerome on Yeezus, but now it's like Homie the Clown and Fire Marshal Bill and Buckwheat. Like it's not like he knows it's a joke at this point. It's out of place in his life. It's like I can't help but picture like those In Living Color sketches where, you know, Fire Marshal Bill will go into like a classroom and the whole point is that he's ridiculous. He's taking this fire marshal thing so seriously that all the kids just think he's a jackass. I mean, he's so over the top. And I mean, that's kind of how I feel like the Yeezus character is at this point. He's in these contexts where he doesn't really belong. I mean, Kanye is a husband and a dad at this point. I mean, it's just so out of character. So he just comes in and kind of just wrecks shit and burns stuff down and just is a joke. And I think that's very much something that Kanye is aware of.
That's what makes violent crime so cathartic, is just completely stripping that person away. Like, he's so aggressive and Yikes and All Mine that you really feel that he's not there at all in violent crimes.
That seems to be kind of what that structure is. Those first three tracks show you this Yeezus persona, or Yeezusian persona, if you want to use that instead. And what it leave is the coming out of that, right? The acknowledgement of the shit that you caused and what that could cost you. And it's kind of like when you're in All Mine, like you see the curtain pulled on Yikes, and then you're just in it with All Mine. That's very much in that Yeezus vein, as the irony's not right there on the surface. It seems very aggressive, very much that early part of The Life of Pablo. Like a Famous or a Feedback or a Father Stretch My Hands Part 2.
Freestyle 4.
Yeah, very much in line with Freestyle 4. Or the early parts of I'm In It. And to come out of that soundscape and be so in it to what it leave is like going into cold water, which must be what it's like for Kanye at times, that he's so like into what he's saying and doing. Like the TMZ interview, where he knew it was going to be a certain way because he set up the contrast between Charlemagne and TMZ. And he said sometimes he speaks loud. But when it's cut and edited.
I totally forgot that he did the Charlemagne. Oh my God. He was setting up the duality.
Yes.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's the thing. When he did the Charlemagne interview and the TMZ interview, he knew when the one was going to come out. He set up the other for that because he wanted to show what the media in this way portrays him to be in this environment, what he comes off as, mm-hmm. where he's in the TMZ offices. He's talking to this group of people. In that situation, everything's different than when he's just sitting in his home one-on-one with somebody else.
And saying essentially the same things.
He's saying very much the same things, but the message changes depending on the environment, which is why he didn't record this in Los Angeles. He recorded this in Wyoming. Like, Los Angeles...
Just like he's...
Yeah. So...
Yeah, just like he said in Wouldn't Leave. It's like, tells me to work on my messaging or whatever it is.
Yep, and that's what happens in Would It Leave. He comes out of that... All Mine, Yikes, last part of I Thought About Killing You, Mania, and it's just like, oh shit, I could lose all of this, I caused these problems, like I need to do better and be better, which then leads into the following three songs with No Mistakes, which seems very telling after like Wouldn't Leave and understanding the problems that you've caused, and then confronting yourself on Ghost Town and growing on violent crimes. So you really get that balance with would it leave in the middle, where you go from the mania to the stability. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, something we talked about a lot in the Yeezus episodes is the concept of immediacy and how the Yeezus character is always lusting after things that are immediate, you know, instant gratification, things that don't last. And I think the structure and the contrast of this album is brilliant because so much of this album is looking forward in a way I think a lot of Kanye albums before have. He seems like he's struggled with looking forward. He's so concerned with how to survive in the now that it's hard for him to look at the long term. And this album, that's something that he's dealing with constantly, where you constantly have a sense of going forward with his family and his daughters and all this stuff. And in All Mine, I think the framework of having that that forward-looking perspective makes All Mine look so ridiculous on purpose, because All Mine is so much about just empty, immediate results.
Yeah.
And I think even the title is perfect, because that's what the Yeezus character, that's how he feels about it. It's all mine. Everything is mine. You know, nobody can take this from me. This is how I build myself up. And then, you know, by the end of that and going into Wouldn't Leave, you realize how totally hollow that is. The contrast to Wouldn't Leave is so sharp you're seeing that. He's dealt with this stuff on other albums in more extended ways, but this album sort of recaps and resolves, which I think is what this album is all about.
Für alle ein Fest zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Diese Woche Gourmet-Dessert-Törtchen. 6x30 Gramm für nur 2,89 Euro. Oder Gourmet-Frischkäse-Gipfel. 90 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke viele weitere festliche Angebote. Jetzt bei Aldi Nord. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I'm just nodding a lot.
Yeah, same. I'm just like basking in the glow of...
Should I break out my insane theory that Chris thinks is completely ridiculous about All Mine?
Yeah, but this is the time and place to get out those theories before we get into the line-by-line analysis and kind of figure out what's what.
So, first of all, I don't think this is that crazy. Like, considering some of the theories we've broken down on previous albums, especially in Yeezus, I don't think this is that far out of the realm of possibility. Anyway, so I think the key, the big seed in All Mine that's speaking to the later portions of the album where he's finding what he actually needs, All Mine is all about sex. It's all about, you know, loss and abandon and just not giving a fuck about living in the now. And basically the sort of like refrain that keeps bumping behind the song, is this, I forget the exact words, but basically he's saying, rubbing on my lamp, get the genie out the bottle, which is obviously like a very sexually suggestive line, sort of like the Yeezus Just Rose Again lyric, clearly talking about his dick, essentially. And then he also sets up in the song previously that none of us would be here without cum, and that I'm going to go in raw, fuck the outcome, right? So he's talking about potentially having a kid or whatever unprotected sex could result in. So he's established all this. So I think essentially what that would mean is that getting the genie out of the bottle, if you're rubbing the lamp, would be, well, what's coming out of the bottle? If the bottle is your dick, well, it would be cum, which he's already talking about. And genies grant you 3 wishes. So to me, that says all again, like, and before I even finish, like, the punchline of this, I mean, this whole album is basically talking about how that Yeezus character, he's acknowledging that he needed Yeezus. He needs that persona. He needed that persona to get where he is. He, you know, without that hardened person, he might not have survived to become the husband and dad he is now. So basically, the Yeezus character gave him the life he has now. So the Yeezus character also was a lustful character who just wanted to fuck all the time. And that genie that came out of the Yeezus bottle, so the come out of Yeezus' dick, basically granted him 3 wishes, which are North, Saint, and Chicago. I'm not kidding. This might sound like I'm being insane, but I really don't think it's that crazy.
I feel like we should cue like a liftoff sample right now.
Do it.
Don't do it.
Maybe I'll edit it in.
Please don't.
You could just you could do the like the liftoff music underneath that whole theory.
Great idea.
I'm saying it.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into line by line analysis and see where we come out on that.
So dismissive.
So dismissive. There are some. Do you have any other big theories?
Coming out the wazoo, man.
Maybe we should save them.
Yeah, it's going to be good to get into all of them.
Oh, I can't wait.
By the time we started, I thought about killing you. We'll have heard Kids See Ghost.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Actually, I was going to say that the other theory I want to throw out is about Kids See Ghost, which obviously isn't out yet. So this is purely speculation. But knowing that Ghost Town was originally on Kids See Ghost and has been put on this album towards the end, I think it was originally
on this album.
Oh, okay.
And then inspired Kids See Ghost.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's one of the things
really?
Our sources told us. Yeah.
Wasn't it on like on those trackless boards? Wasn't Ghost Town on Kids See Ghost at one point?
Yes. So it was originally Kids See Ghost didn't exist when the concept of Ghost Town first came into being. And Ghost Town was its own thing, but then in making it and getting the idea for it, it inspired the project that was Kids See Ghost, which probably means that Ghost Town was at least first looked at sometime in the summer of 2017, because then Kanye went to Japan sometime near the end of 2017 with Kid Cudi, because they had started in on Kids See Ghost.
Right.
So Ghost Town went from Ye inspiring Kids See Ghost to being on Kids See Ghost to being thrown back onto Ye.
Right. But it being on this album, though, and knowing all that and the fact that it must directly play off what's largely going on in Kids See Ghost, I think the end of the album is setting up this idea that the ghost is, you know, the Yeezus. What were you saying? Yeezusian?
Yeezusian.
Yeezusian. You know, those past mistakes that you can't shake. And in a way, because of that, like, those mistakes become a ghost. Yeezus becomes a ghost in a way that haunts Kanye. And you can hear him talking about even on Violent Crimes. And that becomes, I think, the transition into Kids See Ghost, where it's almost like he set up this idea that North has to deal with the ghost of Yeezus, which means, and extending to beyond North, you know, all the kids, all the succeeding generations, like how will Kanye's legacy be viewed? And that includes Kanye, who, you know, refers to himself as a kid throughout. And so I think that's probably what Kids See Ghost will be tackling, is Kanye, now that he's come to terms with himself and accepted all sides of himself and is going to work on being a healthier, unified individual, how does he deal with that fact that those ghosts exist? Which is some heavy ass shit.
The last track on Kids See Ghost is called Reborn.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
Chris,
shit.
Don't.
It's Feel the Love, Kids See Ghost, Fourth Dimension.
Oh, Feel the Love.
A missing fourth track, which was supposed to be Ghost Town. Then Cudi Montage.
Which I'm excited about.
Followed by Devil's Watching and Reborn.
You think that missing fourth track is going to be Creepers 2?
I wish.
I'd be down for it. I'm trying to think of which song. I would not like it to be Marijuana 2. Just because when I saw Kid Cudi in concert, he was just learning how to play the guitar. It was 3 days before Man on the Moon 2 came out. And he played Marijuana while playing the guitar, which was kind of cool. But none of us knew the words yet because the album hadn't fucking come out. And he kept playing the guitar. And then at the end of the song, he's like, play it again. I want to play more. So then he just played the song again. But it was like really focused on playing the guitar. And everybody's just like, can you just play Day and Night?
I think it sounds wonderful.
You had to be there. You had to be there. So I don't know. I've heard a lot of the criticisms and read a lot of the criticisms on Ye, and I still think, like with most Kanye albums, a lot of what's missing is the artistic appreciation for it. Like, people are looking at a song like All Mine and taking it on the surface level rather than looking at as part of a project.
I've heard at least one person say All Mine is just strip club level shit. And I've heard multiple people say some variation of there are no bangers, or the bars are weak, or the beats don't bang. Like, okay. You're looking at this in such a simplistic way.
Yeah, in a way, Kanye is just not looking at albums and music anymore. You know, he's not trying to make a radio hit at all.
Right. Which is why, man, he hasn't been as good as Cold's Dropout and Late Registration.
I like this guy. Who is this?
Ugh, God.
And I think that's, I don't think there's anything wrong with liking that kind of music, preferring that kind of music, whether it's pop or just bangers.
Don't apologize for these fuckers, Chris.
Nah, but, you know, people have their own tastes. But the thing that bothers me is the rejection of quality for another style.
Right.
Like, an Ed Sheeran song is good at doing what Ed Sheeran songs do, right? And if that's what you want from music, that's what you want. Like, you guys love Fast and Furious movies.
Whoa. All right. Let's not make
this is dangerous territory.
Ed Sheeran and Fast and Furious, please.
But it's a certain style of movie that,
You know what, Chris? You don't understand Fast and Furious.
But just like the Marvel movies are a certain style of movie, just like Kubrick movies are a certain style of movie, they all have their own aims. And I think it's one thing to be like, I don't like that, and that's okay. It's another thing to judge one thing through the aims of something else. Like, if you were to judge Fast and Furious through the lens of Kubrick, that'd be dumb, because it's not supposed to be judged through the lens of Kubrick.
Jordan's going to be so frustrated.
We're getting into contentious territory here, because I don't agree at all with this line of thinking.
It's the only line of thinking I got.
I would look at Eyes Wide Shut and The Fate of the Furious through the same lens, and I think they're both great. And I'm not convinced they're doing things that are that different.
You're not.
That's the subject of another podcast.
We'll just have, Fist Fight, the movie podcast between Chris and Jordan.
I think we get your point, though, Chris. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, just there are people that are wanting Ye to be something that it's not, and not appreciating it for what it's doing. And I think that's I hope that's something that people, when listening, will keep in mind as we go forward and dive into deconstructing what's there in the lyrics, narrative and thematic aspects of it, rather than just being like, it does a bang. Like, the bars are weak. It's like,
I think
the bars are doing something.
I think the real difference is, I think where I'm getting hung up on this is, movies, people tend to understand on a basic level that movies, generally speaking, are narrative art of some form. So you can kind of judge and compare pretty much all movies on that ground in some way. But I think a lot of people don't understand the concept of an album being narrative art, really. I mean, it's just about the immediate satisfaction of how it sounds, which I totally get and is totally fair. But if you try to go deeper than that and talk about the album on a narrative, thematic sort of level, a lot of people are just like, what are you talking about? You're reaching. Who cares? It doesn't sound good, you know?
Yeah, that's it may sound how it sounds for a reason. If you know that reason,
right,
you might appreciate how it sounds all the more.
And just so we're clear about this, I think this album sounds amazing, in addition to being great narrative art.
Yeah, there's some songs on this that are in contention for top 10 Kanye songs for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yikes.
Yikes.
That's my favorite, too.
Oh, what? Oh, I wasn't trying to give anything away. I was just reacting, you know? Anything else for the overview?
No, I'm excited as shit.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. And for new listeners, as we get into the albums, it's much more a definitive perspective. At some points we talk about like, well, it could be this, it could be that, but it's more that we've done our critical examination and this is the conclusion that we've come to. And again, at the end of it all, we'll have another episode that's not quite like this, but is more looking at what we think the album is definitively doing.
Right.
So
our thesis.
Yeah. Audio journalism, you know?
Okay. We want to plug some shit?
Yeah. If it is June 18th or later, then congratulations to us. We have a book out called The Yeezus Book, and it is a...
Such a weird way to put that.
It is a... I didn't know where I was going with it, so just had to adjust on the fly. It's a narrative, thematic, and sonic deconstruction of the album Yeezus that is at once a scholarly insight book that's going to change fundamentally how you view that album, while also being a coffee table book that's fun to flip through, look at, kind of a collector's item level for all you Kanye fans out there, or a Kanye fan that you know.
And if you want to support the show, please head to iTunes and rate us. That always helps out the exposure. And then if you want to support us monetarily, you can always find us on patreon.com, patreon.com/Kanye Podcast, and where you can donate as little as $1 a month. And the more you donate, the more perks you get and the more you help us out.
Yeah, and we're going to have currently our main mission is to get to $300 a month so we can consistently put out shirts inspired by Kanye for Kanye fans. One-of-a-kind, unique items. We have two out right now that are pretty awesome. One's inspired by Runaway, one's inspired by Hold My Liquor. So you can check those out on www.watchingthethrone.com.
Yay. And you can follow us on Twitter at Kanye Podcast. And Jordan, what do you got?
I'm on Twitter at @fifth_opinion. Which is also the name of my old podcast, which is defunct, but all the old episodes are still up. That was Fifth Opinion, which Travis and Chris have both made appearances on. Damn straight.
If you want to hear Jordan and I argue about movies in more detail, check out the Boyhood episode.
If you want to hear Travis and I argue for 20 minutes about the climax of Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2, that's up there.
Absolutely. Keep in mind, there are four other people on that episode that just had to listen to Jordan and Travis go back and forth for 20 minutes.
That one was pretty contentious all around, actually. It was a four-way argument.
It was. It was a good one.
The last Twilight movie justified all the previous Twilight movies.
You know, I don't think they need justification, Chris.
They were so bad, but they built up to something so beautiful.
No. You should restart the show, Jordan, and we'll bring Chris into the episodes and redo all the Twilight movies.
So, just so we're clear, like the takeaway for new listeners is that I'm a huge fan of Fast and Furious and Twilight.
Yeah. Do you want to combat that notion?
Nah, it's pretty accurate.
And Zack Snyder. We'll throw that in.
Yes, I'm. Yeah, I should have mentioned that at the top. I'm a professional Zack Snyder defender. It's what I get paid to do.
You know what was one thing that we did to talk about that listeners that have listened to this point will get to hear? The album title being Yay and what that means with Ye.
Oh, shoot, yeah.
The album title, Kanye said that it's not just Yay as in himself, but Kanye in and of itself means only one. But there's a contrast with the idea of it also being the spelling for ye, which is the collective you. That's the most used word in the Bible, as the Bible is very lecture-y towards you all, as in ye shall do this, ye have done a good job with that, ye 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 ye. So Kanye choosing the name Ye at once is about himself, which is an interesting follow-up to the idea of having Yeezus and the life of Pablo and having personas prior to this. And it's almost like those personas fall away, and now we just have the man himself. But then also Ye being Yi, and that this isn't just about him, but it's about everyone else. And that the psyche on the album and how the psyche looks at all these different aspects, from regret to lust to ego to concern from being a parent to apologies for things. This is all something that everybody has to deal with. That Kanye's not just this elevated only one being, but he's also just like everybody else. The celebrity is a human.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you.
I won't add to it because I only screw it up.
You know, the real credit goes to Kanye.
I think, you know, really just that's a big takeaway from the album, right? I mean, acknowledging that all of his parts are him and that he is one with the people. So the people are all one.
Mm. Can't go out on a better note.
Well then, everybody, stay wavy.
And loopy.
They ask me, I tell them, raise your glasses to the sky. This is the last call for alcohol.